All right, everybody, we're here with Greg Goyo Hernandez, and super excited to be here with you, Greg, and we're excited. You know, we're talking about the blog multimedia extravaganza. You know, that's always been my thing with you, man. You're hard to put into a box. You know, not that anybody's really put in a box, but some people kind of conform a little easier. And you've always, since I've known you, just been a one-of-a-kind kind of dude, you know. And I know kind of some of the music that you're into through our conversations, kind of like the stuff that formed your personality, I guess, musical spirit back in the day. I'm not going to say how long ago, but I'll just say I was there with you back in the 90s. And so, being from New York, you know, I was listening to a lot of New York punk. The Ramones were still active when I in the 90s, you know, I got to see them, one of their last shows at Coney Island High, dude. Everybody knows CBGB's. Cool. Coney Island High was a legendary punk spot, dude. And, and so I got to see them And honestly, man, I slept on them a little bit. I knew their place in music history, of course, but when I heard them live, and they were only playing to like maybe 150 people, you know, those little clubs in New York, they were so tight, dude. That was like as if you had put on a CD. Veteran guys already, they weren't there to impress anybody. They were there because of the music. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I want to find out about you, man, your formative years. Where were you born? Talk to us.
I was born 12. Yeah.
Where?
Wow, that's great. You've seen the Ramones. That's
awesome. I got to see the Ramones one of their last shows. Yeah, talk to me. So you were born in L.A. I don't want to guess, but I think you told me your dad is from Germany and your mom is Mexicana?
No, actually the opposite. It turned out to be the opposite.
yeah. Well, so talk to us a little bit about you. You know, when you grew up in East Los. What's going on? Talk to us.
That was a transgression. Yeah, with my mom and how my dad met was through the American Army.
Right? Ah.
And so his parents were first generation. Guadalajara, Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you know, once they got across the border through El Paso, they end up living in Colorado, Southern Colorado.
Wow.
In a town called Rocky Ford, Colorado. Now I understand it's kind of near Durango and all that.
So it's in the southwest.
Well, kind of bordering New Mexico, it's been intriguing, but my dad's dad happened to run a business through a migration farm, which they did farming and whatnot, and owned a bar apparently, and so yeah, my dad came up through those routes, you know.
You got kind of a really close proximity to New Mexico. I know you really love it here.
In that area, man.
I don't know if you know this. You probably do, but that area, Southern Colorado, Southwest. You got Durango, and you've got Silverton. You got Mancos. You got those towns right there. Those little towns. If you go a little further up, you go to Telluride. Those little towns are kind of like counterculture towns. You know, they're kind of what they would call like the original hippies. You know, they moved from east to west, and you had, of course, the regular folks that were there. So that kind of tells me something about your dad and your mom. No wonder they created you.
This is before my mom was a picture. You know, so yeah. So my dad.
That's what your dad was.
My dad's dad came from Guadalajara, Mexico, and they migrated through El Paso to Colorado.
I keep forgetting your mom is a German American.
Yeah.
Okay.
So my dad was a first generation American Mexican.
Yeah.
Before, And there were campesinos, there were farm workers before Chicano was even termed.
Wow.
So we're talking like the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
Here in America, you know, migrating from Mexico.
Great Depression
until
time.
Later, until my dad was in the Army, until the 50s. And at the same time when Elvis Presley was signed up for the Army, I think he was, you know, he was drafted. I think my dad was signed up, actually. But
I think Elvis served. Didn't he serve?
So what happened was, you know, they happened to be on the same base in Germany through the Army. My dad was stationed where Elvis Presley was stationed.
Wow.
So obviously we're talking about West Germany, right?
Right, sure.
So that's how my mom met my dad, basically, in a nutshell. Apparently he was driving on the Autobahn, and one of his American Chevy muscle cars that he imported back in those days over there, I guess he blew a tire, and the person who picked up my dad happened to be my mom's brother. And so, long story short, you know, he went with my mom when she was only like 18 or something like that.
Yeah. Well, so, there you go. Yeah. Love, bro.
So mostly though was my mom's side was the more musical side.
Okay.
And my dad's side was very more labor or farming, you know. So it was all business. So I got a lot of my business drive. So hence, a lot of the business side, my drive to stay organized and to facilitate and do things, I think I credit that from my dad's side of the family. And more of the music side from my mom's side, which was a lot of...
Okay, well, talk to us a little bit about that. When you say your mom's side, so did you have uncles who played or cousins or...
Oh, yeah. Like a Mexican family, I had a huge families on both sides of the continent. A huge Mexican family, and from my dad's side and my mom's side, there was a large family.
So on your mom's side, there were a bunch of musicians on your mom's side. She had did your mom play anything or?
Yeah, well, my mom played, I guess, some piano growing up, but there was other family members who played, you know, like the trumpets and whatnot, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, definitely more music orientated.
Yeah.
But eventually, you know, after, you know, my dad came back and served his duty in Germany, they moved back to the States, and they ended up, the whole entire Hernandez family ended up in East LA, Pico Rivera. And hence now it's the 60s.
Wow, I can imagine these slows in those days, bro.
This is the 60s, yeah.
Brown power.
I'm a 70s baby, so I definitely got to experience East LA in the 70s growing up as a little kid.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's quite the place.
So that's all part of the Chicano story, if you will, too, you know, in a sense, because that's what happened in Boyle Heights and all these areas, the communities, you know, the paradigm shifts, you know.
That's right. You know, you're
Russian people and Japanese people used to live in those communities, and then come the 50s and 60s, it all kind of changed over, if you will, you know. And then all the work with the Chicano movement came about the 70s, and all the movement with Salazar and the whole movement coming out of East LA, and then all the way up to Northern California with the campesinos.
All the way up.
Which just pretty much reminded me of my dad's family, my father's side family. They were the early campesinos of the 40s, you know?
Yeah, all of that.
Having the American experience, living the American dream.
Well, let me tell you, man, it's the campesinos and you know, the people who work the people who work the land is really, you know, the ones that keep us alive. You know what I mean? we wouldn't have.
You know, it's ridiculous what's going on, right? We see a lot of the hypocrisy showing themselves clearly during this time.
It's an unfortunate time, but like you said, it exposes perspectives that were kind of hidden, you know, although we can kind of guess that sometimes people with perspective, a tragedy, I guess, an emergency, catastrophe like we're experiencing now really brings out either the best or the worst in people. And so I'm glad that I'm here with one of the best of people, Greg Goyo Hernandez. And
thanks for having me on. Thanks for
Goyo on the go. Yeah, we had a lot of folks comment about. Yeah, go ahead. We had a lot of people comment about the first iteration of Goyo on the go, and my job is to get as much art out of you as I can. And so, you know, before
to your listeners, please listen and go to the community publishing website and find the project Flattening the Curve. I'd love this for your listeners. And
yeah, well, that's there. You got your bio. Flattening the Curve is there, you know, and Greg is on Facebook. We're going to be putting out some more of your audio clips and all that, you know, so as the time goes on. But I was going to say, you know, Greg, you also, besides just being a photographer, and not just, but a photographer, a musician, all the other stuff you do.
Photography. I did a lot. Most of my photography was like in high school, right? It seems like that was a time of like really experimenting with new things, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you're also a writer, and so there is an article here.
An aspiring writer such as such as yourself, much to read. Respect to you, sir.
Thank you so much, you know. But I just write little. I write kids' books, man. You write stuff that puts life into perspective. And so, with that in mind, I want to move on to this article that we're about to publish tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's you know, kind of like punk rock. It covers a lot. You know, meat is meat murder. There's a lot of different questions that you kind of ruminate upon. And then you talk about, you know, a lot of music history within the movement for food justice, you know. And so you kind of cover a few things there, and it's quite the read. And please tell us, you know, this was originally a print article. Tell us the organization that printed it and talked to us.
Originally a friend of the community publishing asked me that if I wanted to write an article about anything, and it was an article for Food Not Bombs, which is an organization charity to feed homeless.
Food Not Bombs is an incredible organization. Incredible.
Yeah, and so apparently Los Angeles downtown finally opened up their own chapter. I've been affiliated with the Silver Lake chapter here in LA, but. But yeah, so this new chapter in downtown LA, they started off and they were doing shows this past year, and so they had an article which was printed to give for free or to patrons and whatnot. But when I was asked to do an article, I was really dumbfounded because, you know, I don't really see myself as a writer per se, you know, even though I've always had interest in doing creative writing since high school, college. But so I thought about it, like, what am I going to write about? Well, I thought, well, it's about food and it's about social movement. So I just went ahead and talked about veganism and punk rock and what it is. And what it is about today with today's social media and how it's portrayed and where it's come from, the roots, and how it's carried through from the 70s, you know, from the UK.
That's right.
And its inspirations here in North America with its skinhead movement, with bands from DC, like Minor Threat, and then its own movement here in California, which was also kind of reminded me of countercultures like the hippie movement, so that made me think. And so it was interesting of kind of like things that kind of parallel with different countercultures when it comes to veganism and how their lifestyles are a little different.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that gives us a good perspective on you know, on the article per se. There's a lot of information, and so I want to dig a little bit into that. you know, you're kind of, not kind of, you're a music historian as well. We got to throw that in there. And knowing the part about your dad and how he was a man of the land, you know, all of that kind of ties together, you know, and
And one important thing is, like, I'm a carnivore and still am. So this whole thing is definitely a carnivore punk rocker perspective.
yeah. And then, you know, thanks for, you know, saying that. And then, you know, it's very authentic of you to say that. But I want, you know, it doesn't mean that you, your perspective is not interesting and welcoming. So I really think that you were approached by these people because they knew that you were very thoughtful and you would craft something that would get people to think, you know. And that's the thing. That's the thing you that community publishing likes to do, is finding authors or people, artists, who will get us to think about, you know, life and all that. And so this article is very impressive. You know, and one of the things I want to ask you about it is, you know, you talk about the UK, NYC, DC, you know, the punk scene and all that. Of course, you guys had a lot of great bands out there in LA. Is there a kind of like was there a strand that you kind of gravitated toward? And what I mean by that is, like, you know, you've got your traditional punk that started out, it was totally rebellious, you know, and then as time went on, you know, you had some other subgenres of punk that weren't as socially conscious or socially commentary, making as much social commentary. And so I wanted to know, like, what attracted you? Where did you fit in that scene? Of course, you grew up a little later than, you're a child of the 70s, but you didn't, you weren't an adult in the 70s or a teenager in the 70s. So you kind of experienced punk in the 80s and 90s. So talk to me about that.
Well, my experience with with the punk rock, in the 80s, I was definitely a teenager coming, you know, growing up into my late teens. And yes, punk rock culture and California was very hyperdrive, very mainstreamed, definitely very edgy. And some of it was, which drove me to it, was more things that dealt with social justice messages, you know, like bands like Dead Kennedys, I believe.
Yes.
And the music, you know, there's the music part of it that's interesting, because there's some bands that like the music and I don't really understand what they're saying.
Right.
And you know what's funny? Growing up, when I was younger, I didn't know Minor Threat had anarchore punk roots from the UK, meaning that they were down for social justice, but they were vegans. And I didn't really understand that, tell you the truth, when I was younger, listening to Minor Threat. I just loved the music, and I could feel like there was a sense like they had really something to say. And even then, I didn't really realize until a little later growing up, like, oh yeah, okay, well, these were vegan punk rockers, you know?
Yeah, that's right. And
their lifestyle was like, I mean, there's different, from this article which I was writing, there was different levels of humanitarian, how self, of a wellness thing that it can go. Like, some of these punk rockers would be absent from sex, some skinheads,
right?
Like, no sex, no smoking, no drinking.
And that was the straight edge movement, right? How far back did that movement go?
But with that, it went further into, like, don't abuse animals, animal rights, But in the punk rock spectrum of things, of me growing up in the 80s in California, there was a little more, just kind of more male driven, hence, you know, you had skateboarding and surfing. So, you know, there were social justice messages, but it didn't go as deep into that.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense, you know, and it gives us a good perspective and insight. Yeah. Now I know, for myself, getting involved in the scene a bit, I was a little bit more of the industrial goth strain. But even within there, you know, you had bands that were talking about social justice and the Sisters of Mercy are a big band that just in goth band, you know, that talked about social justice, and you had a few other bands like that. So I always, you know, kind of gravitated that toward that myself, but I'm like you, you know, I gotta like the music as well. And so when Rage Against the Machine came around in the early 90s, for me, obviously I experienced them after you did, because you were in LA and you probably heard the buzz. But for me, what it brought together was, you know, New York being the home of the birth of rap, hip hop, and then having that other side of music that I enjoyed. It was kind of a breakthrough experience. I'm like, wow, the music can sound this good and, you know, like make some good points. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, like, you know, when you hear the skinhead type music coming out of DC, it's definitely, it's heavy, but you hear the different psychedelic influences, like in California, like the Dead Kennedys. Type of sound going on, and then but like bands like, well, hardcore bands like DRI, Dirty Rotten Imbeciles, all these bands that came out of like, you know, Riverside and the Great Pomona area have these really great fuel driven songs, you know.
Yeah,
but that dealt with like animal rights and environmentalism and whatnot, and but yeah, they, you know, maybe they weren't as straight edge then, right? So, you know.
Well, you see that whole that whole conversation of animal rights. I feel like you hit the nail on the head, because, you know, you've had a lot of bands that discuss, you know, human rights and civil rights and all of that, which is of course really important. But the animal rights folks, you know, like you said, Minor Threat, and there were, you know, acts that were discussing that kind of thing. Yeah. They weren't as well. They were, Minor Threat was well known, but it, like, I didn't know when I first heard them, they were kind of making those kinds of statements. You know what I mean? And so it's fascinating that those messages from those days are still, or maybe even more so, pertinent today. You know what I mean? With everything that's going on.
Yeah.
You think that?
Yeah, like 1977, you know, you have the Sex Pistols, you have the Clash, you know, and they were talking about like more worldly political things, but you have the anarcho-punk skinheads out of England, and they were all about animal rights and total hardcore vegans.
Wow.
You know, no drinking, no smoking, and, you know, there was just like the realm of a different trip there with that, you know.
But
growing up, you know, I guess if it became, as in my culture, I was a meat eater, so maybe, you know, I just had my ear on for the Clash, you know, the Pistols. It's like, wow, you know. But I totally now understand, like, how there was this really underground, you know, wellness. It really came back down to a wellness thing, which I write in my article. It's a thing that, you know, it just deals with wellness.
Right. I noticed that, you know, and talk a little bit more about that. How do you see yourself becoming vegan? Are you recommending it? Without giving the article away, I want to just know.
to each their own is what I say. I've been making some delicious veggie soups this quarantine. This past month. And I love it. I love all kinds of food. I love all, and you know, my favorite food is, like, another great thing about traveling to Southeast Asia is the vegetables there.
Is that so? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Oh, I lost probably, like, I always lose a little weight when I travel there to that part of the world.
In a good way. That's really good. That's what they call in the business a teaser. So that, you know, we have, we'll be talking about the culinary choices and selections of Southeast Asia. But, you know, we wanted to definitely touch a little bit upon this album. I mean, I'm sorry, this article. And then, you know, you talk a lot about, you know, some things like gender equality, anti-racism, anti-fascism. And these are all things that kind of stick with us now. We struggle with that still at this point. You know, the United States hasn't had a female president. You know, well, like all the other countries have, and we haven't, and so that's you know, things that we still struggle with now. So thank you for providing a light to these topics through music, and I think that's one of your gifts, that not just an incredible musician, but you express yourself that way, but you can express yourself through the written word. And so I'm excited for people to read this article and to comment, and it'll be out tomorrow on communitypublishing.org, and you know, you scroll to the blog section, you'll see Greg Hernandez, and Goyo will take you to his bio, and there'll be a link to the article. So Greg, anything else you want to say regarding veganism, the food, and music in terms of the movement in the 80s and 90s?
I guess it's buy organic and support your mom and pops, support your farmers.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I feel that that's more important than ever.
And grow our own food, right?
Grow our own food, yeah. No, we'll leave it at that, and we'll get into the food stuff. But thank you so much, Greg, and it's really nice.
Otherwise, are you going to eat that? Cheers, man.